I don't know if you picked up on it, but when Solomon asks for wisdom, he doesn't ask for intelligence. He asks for a wise heart and an enlarged heart. And so God likes the request, and so he gives him what he asks, and then God says, I give you a heart so wise. So, in other words, the wisdom of God, and in the Old Testament, wisdom is always considered to be a participation in the mind and the heart of God. But for God, love and knowledge are the same thing, and they both flow freely from his heart. St. John in the Gospel says, God is love. And love is not so much something you do with your mind. It involves that too. The two aren't totally separate, but it's primarily something that you do from the heart. And so we don't have a feast day in the church year celebrating the head of Christ, but we have a feast day celebrating his sacred heart, because our identification with Christ is not so much with his mind as it is with his heart. Now, the heart, in biblical terms, is a little bit different from the way we think of it in modern times. We think of the heart as, you know, controlling the emotions and those kinds of things. But for biblical people, the heart was the center of your person. It would be something like what we in modern times call soul. It's the deepest center of who you are. And so the deepest center of who God is love. And that's the same with Christ. Christ is the word that expresses and sacramentalizes, images that love of God. Now, in the Old Testament, the word logos in Greek was used to refer to several different things. First of all, it was the word of the Pentateuch, believed by them in those days to all be written by Moses. So it's the word of Moses. It's the truth that comes from that Exodus tradition. Secondly, it's the law. And so the law was given by God to a beloved people whom he loved so much that, like a loving parent, he taught them how to act. And so he gives them the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments are commandments about love. The first three are about love of God, and the final seven are about love of neighbor. So the law, and it, you know, over the centuries it got minute and detailed and excessive and things like that, but for the most part, Old Testament people considered the law to be the very word of God, the love of God expressed in a codified way. And so the responsorial psalm, Lord, I love your commands. You know, and again, in modern times, we kind of hate the law. It infringes on our freedoms, and it's like, oh, well, it's the law, so I have to do this. But Old Testament people, they praised God for the law. That was the greatest gift that God had given them. He told them how to act like he acts, to become like him. So, for example, the Old Testament prophecy, be holy because the Lord your God is holy. Your holiness is a participation in God's holiness. Everything is this relationship between God and God's people. So then the word became, later after the law, it became the prophetic word. And then finally, in the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, it becomes the wisdom of God. And Jesus, the incarnation of God in human flesh, he fulfills all of that. In his person, he is the law. He is the prophetic word. He is the wisdom of God. And then St. Paul says in that second reading to the Romans, remember that you are predestined by God. God has willed since before the world began that you would be conformed to the image of his Son. That's what Christian life is. It's being conformed to Christ. And the power of the Spirit does that for us. It conforms us, joins us, unites us to Christ. And we become then the image. We become the Word. Because Christ has breathed his spirit onto the church is that presence, the church is that word, it is that righteousness. And so all of that is, at least in idealistic language, what all truth and all religion is about. But of course, there's failure. You know, we read today from one of the bright moments in Solomon's life. But Solomon turned out to be kind of a jerk, too. You know, here, if you only listen to what we heard today, you think, oh, he was just totally self-abnegating and just wanted to have a big heart and wanted to love his people and all that kind of stuff. And he didn't want riches, but actually he became very rich. And he became corrupted. And so human failure comes alongside of God's grace. And, you know, there's this idealistic kingdom language about the way things, the way God envisions things to be, but then there's human sin that gets in the way of that. And God, in his infinite patience, puts up with our frailty, with our sin, forgives us over and over again, and calls us to the table of fellowship, to the meal of the kingdom, even though we're not there yet, even though we're not worthy. And somehow it doesn't depend on our worthiness, it depends on God's love. Again, God has an infinite heart, and he has an infinite mind as well, but even his mind flows from his heart. I mean, if you can image God in a human body, it's primarily about love, and love is about mercy, and it's about compassion, it's about forgiveness, it's about reconciliation, calling people constantly to return to God despite their sin, to trust in God's compassion and mercy and love, and to not run away and separate ourselves. And that's the temptation, that's what the devil is always tempting us to do. You're a worthless sinner. You don't deserve God. God must hate you. Go away. And God is always standing here at the altar and saying, no, don't listen to that. That's your own sin. It's your own weakness. It's your own mind playing tricks with you. And we might call that the devil. Don't listen to that. Come back to me. Come forward. Bask in my love, and if you're willing to do that, my spirit can be breathed into you daily, over and over again, and conform you over and over again and more deeply to the image of my son.